Deutsche Welle Africa Link.
And welcome to Africa Link. I'm Isaac Mugabe in Bonn, Germany. Coming up on the program, German Chancellor Angela Merkel calls for closer ties with Africa at the start of the European Union and Africa Summit in Brussels.
Der Nachbarkontinent Afrika gewinnt an Bedeutung.
Our neighboring continent Africa is growing more important. We will make clear, and I will do so personally, that we want to see primarily the chances and opportunities and not only the problems.
Security has been stepped up in the coastal town of Mombasa in Kenya after the assassination of a radical Muslim cleric, Abubakar Sharif, also known as Makaburi.
If anybody out there knows anything about the shooting, we would really appreciate it. It's a sad and a tragic thing to happen. We shall investigate.
These stories and more to come in this edition of Africa Link, straight from the studios of Deutsche Welle here in Bonn, Germany. Stay with us.
Top story.
Germany and France have announced a new plan at the EU-Africa Summit in Brussels to work as allies in Africa on three fronts, that is security, development and climate change. Speaking on the sidelines of a meeting meant to promote closer economic ties, UN Secretary-General Ban Ki-moon urged European and African nations to step up their efforts to end the desperate plight of the people of the Central African Republic. At the summit, the EU also officially launched its military mission to Bangui, unveiling plans to send 1,000 troops to bolster African and French forces. The EU force was due to be deployed last month, but was delayed because of insufficient troops and aircraft commitments. Before we came on air, I spoke to DW's Christophe Hasselbach in Brussels, and I started by asking him whether a timetable has been set for the deployment of the troops.
Yes, now the plan is that almost 1,000 security forces, that is, troops and police from several EU countries will be assembled until May this year, and that they will be deployed in May, but only in the capital, Bangui, at strategic places like the airport, and that they will be deployed there for 6 months. As to logistics, Germany will provide 2 transport planes, others will do the same, but the Germans will not send any combat troops.
Why did it take so long to get to this stage?
I think the main reason was that many European countries have complained that the French have started this mission on their own without asking anyone, and that they were enjoying the international praise for doing so, but that they wanted the support only afterwards. And they have said this is not the way to do it. You have to agree on a European mission first, and you need the support of others, and then we can do it together. A second reason, I think, is that some governments are seeing it as far away. This is an internal problem in an African country. It's nothing to do with us. So I think these two are the reasons.
The crisis in Central African Republic seems to have taken center stage. What else is high on the agenda?
The big thing here is trade. Europe wants to turn this relationship with Africa from one of development policy, the Europeans give, Africa takes, to one of trade and investment. And in other words, end Africa's dependence on European state-funded aid and strengthen, if you like, the normal private trade relations. And this is really the theme of this summit, so to say.
The EU has traditionally been Africa's biggest trading partner. Has the timing of the conference got anything to do with China's increasing influence in Africa?
No, I think this is a coincidence, but it is true that the EU is very, very aware that China has become extremely influential in Africa. Now, the Chinese have the advantage, if you like, that they don't ask any awkward questions to African elites about democracy and human rights and so on, and the EU does. In a way, this puts Europeans at a disadvantage, but the EU says that ultimately it is in the African interest, and in particular in the interest of the African people rather than in the interest of African governments and African elites. And if Europe insists on good governance and democracy, this will be ultimately in Africa's interest too.
African leaders want a partnership of equals. I mean, a partnership that is based on mutual respect and equality, rather than development cooperation. Do you see this happening anytime soon?
It is not only what African leaders want, it's also what European representatives like Council President Van Rompuy and Commission President Barroso say. It is the official aim of Europe. But to be honest, a partnership of equals is one in which both sides are equally powerful. This is the way how the world works. And perhaps the only country that could be really an equal partner because of its economic might is South Africa. And it is perhaps ironic that the South African president, Jacob Zuma, is not in Brussels. He has complained the EU is cherry-picking its guests. It's inviting only those heads of state the EU likes.
I was speaking to DW's Christoph Hasselbach in Brussels. One of the leaders at the two-day summit is Liberia's president, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. DW's Bent Rigert spoke to her on governance issues in Africa and her expectations of Europe.
I hope the countries of Europe, many of which are members of the African Development Bank, will give the bank's program the fullest of support, because it goes beyond just responding to specific needs of fragile states, but helping within all states to build that resilience that will enable them to respond to crises when they do arise.
What are the main reasons for the existence of fragile states in Africa? What are your recommendations to solve this problem?
The lack of viable institutions, the lack of diversity in economies, the lack of immature political institutions, the lack of equity in many of the societies, managing endowment and natural resources well, all of these that create the inequalities in society that leads to dissent and could lead to a breakdown in the social order.
European institutions often criticize governance and bad governance in Africa. Is that a main problem in your view?
We do have bad governance in Africa. We do have sometimes not sufficient, strong financial and procurement management systems, accountability and transparency. We do have corruption, there's no doubt about it. I think many of our countries are trying to cope with that, trying to build the institutions and the laws and the strategies and the institutions to deal with it. It's a continuing battle which everyone must continue and try. Some countries have already progressed beyond that. I don't want to name countries, but you know them. Some of us who are still struggling with it have to continue to intensify our effort to be able to get to the place where we have the fullest of confidence that our institutions can respect the laws and can make sure that we reduce the improprieties in our society.
Do you think the summit with the EU can bring a leap forward in this respect?
I believe so. I think this summit provides an opportunity to discuss these issues. It strengthens the partnership between Europe and Africa, and it opens up new horizons in some of the areas that maybe have not been able to give particular attention.
That was Liberia's President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf speaking to DW's Bent Rigert.
Africa Link, every weekday on Deutsche Welle.
Security has been stepped up in the coastal town of Mombasa in Kenya after the assassination of a radical Muslim cleric, Abubakar Sharif, also known as Makaburi. The cleric was a vocal supporter of Osama bin Laden and was on the UN sanctions list, accused of being a leading facilitator and recruiter of young Kenyan Muslims for violent militant activity in Somalia. He was also said to have strong ties with the Al-Shabaab Islamists in neighboring Somalia. In the capital Nairobi, especially Isli, home to the large population of Kenyan ethnic Somalis, security also remained tight. James Shimanyula reports.
Mombasa preacher Mohammed Ali was with Makaburi when the attack took place. He described what happened.
We walked a few steps and then we heard gunshots. I jumped and my companions also jumped behind the foundations for a building. Later we saw police officers rushing toward us. When we got up, we saw Abubakar Sharif Makaburi lying down dead along with a young man called Bahiro. I felt pain in my waist. The police officers told us to keep our heads down and keep quiet. We remained lying there for nearly 1 hour in the trench.
Shortly before Makaburi was killed, he addressed a press conference in Mombasa, where he spoke about the mysterious killings of two other prominent Muslim clerics. Makaburi used the occasion to predict his own death.
It's not that I fear for my life. My life is in danger, but my life is in the hands of Allah. And nothing will happen to me except if Allah wills. It won't happen before or after. It will happen when Allah wills. The people who are doing these killings are the Kenya police. It is very well known. Unfortunately, the commissioner of police was here in Mombasa, and he confirmed it to us Muslims in Mombasa that the police are doing killings by saying that anybody caught with a firearm will be killed, not taken to court. The order to kill confirmed that the police are doing these killings.
In an official comment on the killing of Makaburi, Richard Ngatia, police chief for Kisauni on the northern mainland Mombasa, did not allude to Makaburi's accusations.
We don't know who shot them or why, and the three surviving people do not know who shot at them. If anybody out there knows anything about the shooting, we would really appreciate it. It's a sad and a tragic thing to happen. We shall investigate.
But Sheikh Mohammed Dor, chairman of the Islamic Party of Kenya, lost no time in describing the killing as a terrorist attack.
We are saying it is a terrorist act. If the government is sincere in what they are preaching, that they are against terrorist act, then they should give us a full report what happened on this particular terrorist act, which very, very strangely, it has happened to other three Muslim clerics.
On Wednesday, Interior Minister Joseph Olelenku said the killers of Makaburi would be arrested like any other suspected terrorists. This was an attempt to curb the rising tension in Mombasa and other parts of the country after a series of attacks and killings reportedly carried out by Al-Shabaab terrorists. Kenyans have been expressing their concerns following a spate of deadly attacks and rising insecurity in the country.
It's so unfortunate that such a thing is happening. This thing has interfered with the peace enjoyed in Kenya. We need to look unto God. We are not going to relent at this war.
We are upset about what's happening in Mombasa, in Nairobi. We just don't know what to do. We walk in fear. You worry that when you go somewhere, you'll have problems. Whenever we walk, we're restless. The time has come for the government to tighten security.
There's a lot of corruption at the immigration in this country. That corruption means you can buy citizenship. We give you the right to live in this country. When you give a Somali citizenship and you ask about nationality and he shows you a Kenyan national identity card, it will be very difficult for you then to probe further and say, where is your father? Where did you come from?
By Wednesday afternoon, more than 1,000 people had been arrested in the majority Somali East Lee district of Nairobi, where a triple bombing claimed 6 lives on Monday.
James Shimanyula reporting from Nairobi.
Behind the headlines.
In the aftermath of the Rwandan genocide in 1994, at least 2 million ethnic Hutus fled into neighboring DR Congo. But while many of these have since returned home, perpetrators of the genocide, who largely form the Democratic Forces for the Liberation of Rwanda, FDLR, continue to terrorize the local population in eastern DRC. As a result, peace has eluded this part of the Congo for the last 20 years. Now, a self-defense militia known as Raia Mutomboki has taken up arms to defend the local population from the marauding FDLR. Simone Schlindwine filed this report that is now presented by Stephen Mpoku.
The man who leads the Raia Mutomboki likes to be referred to as Kikuni or simply the lawyer. The name Raia Mutomboki translates as angry people. The militia has offshoots in many of eastern Congo's villages. Kikuni came from a small village which was burned down 3 times by the Democratic Forces of the Liberation of Rwanda, FDLR, a Hutu militia formed in 1994. It includes many soldiers of the former Rwandan army, which was driven out by today's president, Paul Kagame, and his rebel forces. The FDLR had killed numerous villagers. Since no one was protecting the local population, they formed the Raia Mutomboki to defend themselves. Kikuni keeps skulls of the victims as proof of the FDLR's crimes and as a justification for his rebellion. Like Rwanda's President Paul Kagame showed visitors to his country the skulls and bones of the victims of the 1994 genocide, in order to demonstrate what the perpetrators had done to his country. Kikuni does the same.
Si on a fait ça, c'est pour montrer la vérité.
We are showing these remains to the international community to illustrate the truth of the matter. We are now also showing the skulls of the victims on our side, because we're sick and tired of all the talking. The international community must understand that we have reason to take up arms. If we don't, we'll all be killed.
The refugee camps in eastern Congo are completely overcrowded. In North Kivu province alone, there are over 1 million displaced people. Some have been living in wretched conditions for years and are dependent on donations to survive, because they cannot return to their villages to cultivate their fields. Congolese citizens like Jeremy Hangi, a spokesman for the displaced people in the Minova camp in eastern Congo, says the FDLR is to blame for the war.
What rekindled the war in our native region of Masisi over and over again is the presence of the FDLR. It's high time they return to their home country of Rwanda, or we Congolese will never live in peace.
The FDLR consists of about 1,000 fighters, but they protect around 20,000 Rwandan Hutu refugees. Many of them are wives and children of the fighters. To feed these refugees, FDLR fighters loot villages, confiscate harvests, or drive Congolese villagers from their land. The FDLR fighters have long lost the capability to wage another war against their native Rwanda. Nevertheless, FDLR Commander Colonel Stani insists on negotiations with Rwanda's Tutsi government and presents his militia men as victims.
The regime in Rwanda calls us perpetrators of genocide and terrorists. That's purely propaganda. We want to be seen as Rwandans like everyone else, but the world has forgotten us.
Since the FDLR were branded as perpetrators of the genocide, this prompted the UN, the World Food Programme, the UNHCR and other relief organizations to withhold aid from Rwandan Hutu refugees. The FDLR has tried to negotiate with the Rwandan government several times, but has not succeeded. The UN, in turn, has given up trying to persuade the militia to disarm voluntarily in Congo. The UN troops in the country are now preparing a military offense to defeat the FDLR once and for all. 20 years after the genocide in Rwanda, the Congolese may finally get a chance to live in peace.
Stephen Mpoko with that report by Simone Schindlwind.
What's new? What's interesting? What matters? Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
In South Africa, President Jacob Zuma has sent his response to the Public Protector's report to Parliament on his Nkandla homestead. The report alleges that Zuma and his family unduly benefited from some of the non-security upgrades to his private home that cost 246 million rands of taxpayers' money. In a statement on Wednesday, the presidency said Zuma has decided that he will give full and proper consideration to the matter only once he receives a report from the Special Investigating Unit. From South Africa, Subri Govinda reports.
When the public protector, Ms. Thuli Madonsela, released her final report on the 19th of March, she had given President Jacob Zuma 14 days to submit the report to Parliament. She also stated that Zuma should pay back several millions of rand that apparently had nothing to do with the upgrading of security at President Zuma's Nkandla home. These include a swimming pool, a chicken run, amphitheater, and a football pitch. Opposition leaders have accused Zuma of deliberately misleading Parliament last November when he said he and his family had paid for the upgrade at his Nkandla rural homestead. This is what Zuma had said during the parliamentary debate.
I've noted all sorts of public comments to the fact that government built my home in Nkandla. My residence in Nkandla has been paid for by the Zuma family. All the buildings And every room we use in that residence was built by ourselves as a family and not by government.
Even after the public protector's damning report revealed that taxpayers' money had been misused, a few days ago, Zuma told a campaign rally in Cape Town that he had not asked for the upgrades and therefore would not pay for them. Zuma's ruling ANC has come out strongly in support of its leader and said the party stood fully behind him and his presidential re-election bid. But one of the elders of South African politics, Dr. Mangosuthu Buthelezi, who is the leader of the Inkatha Freedom Party, says the Inkandla scandal only highlighted the extent to which corruption has grown in Africa's biggest economy.
In a normal democracy, it would be so. It would be automatic. In a normal democracy, it would be automatic that they would step down. That there are big problems, corruption.
Paulus Zulu, a prominent academic and author based at the University of KwaZulu-Natal, said the Inkandla scandal shows how South African society is still struggling, especially morally.
It's a shame on South Africa. It's honestly a shame on the country that we could spend that amount of money on one person. It's a reflection of how morally bankrupt we have become, that our priorities go in that direction in the first instance.
Most of the South Africans I spoke to seem to be disillusioned with the Inkandla scandal and corruption in general.
There's nothing we can do about that because there is corruption from the bigger persons to the downwards person. So there's nothing we can do about corruption.
Mandela never had security like that. What gives him the right to take the money from the people?
I think he should be held accountable. My view is that if they spent 100 million rand looking after the president, it may be a different story.
Next step, he should step down, but nothing will happen because that's the way the country is run.
Despite a show of solidarity by the ruling ANC for Zuma, the Inkandla scandal has brought to light deep divisions within the party itself. Some leaders, such as the current Deputy President Kalema Motlanthe and Dr. Paulo Jordan, a former cabinet minister, have called for those mentioned in the report to account for their actions or non-actions.
Sobri Govinda reporting there.
Opinion.
In our opinion slot, we go back to our top story on the EU-Africa summit that is taking place in Brussels. Some European leaders, like British Foreign Secretary William Hague, painted a bright picture of the ties between Europe and Africa.
It's an exciting moment with a great deal of opportunity now in relations between European Union countries and the countries of the African Union, particularly in building the prosperity of all of our countries.
We now ask, will a new focus on closer ties between Europe and Africa yield better results than before? Tell us what you think by sending an email to feedback.africa@dw.de, a letter to AfricaLink, DW 53110 Bonn, Germany, or an SMS to +491609575910, and we will read some of your comments right here at AfricaLink. And before we call it a day, a reminder of the stories that we've covered on the program. German Chancellor Angela Merkel calls for an end to the violence in the Central African Republic at the EU-Africa summit in Brussels. Security has been stepped up in the coastal town of Mombasa in Kenya after the assassination of radical Muslim cleric Abubakar Sharif, also known as Makaburi. South Africa's President Jacob Zuma has responded to the report that incriminates him for using taxpayers' money to upgrade his private residence. And as usual, if you wish to contact us on the stories that we've covered or if you have questions, the email is feedback.africa@dw.de, a letter to AfricaLink, DW 53110 Bonn, Germany, or an SMS can also work to us, and the number is +491609575910. And with that, we come to the end of this program. Africa Link returns tomorrow at the same time. On behalf of the team and the studios, I'm Isaac Mugabe, wishing you a good time.